topic is Futurism in the Adventist Church. For the last few years, a number of Seventh-day Adventists have begun to apply the time prophecies in Daniel 12 to the future, rejecting the traditional Adventist understanding, which places the 3.5 times and the 12, 19, and 13, 35 days as prophetic times in the past. They claim these time periods are to be understood as literal days still to come. I'm going to go pretty fast because we have a lot of material to cover and time is running fast away here. Adventist futurists. I never thought when I started my ministry nearly 40 years ago that the day would come where we have actually futurists in the church. That is, people who interpret apocalyptic prophecies according to the futurist idea. But that's what's happened. One of them is Marion Barry. She's a retired educator. And she says, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just what is important, where she says here, the timelines of Daniel 12 are not couched in symbolic context and should therefore be considered literal time. Therefore, the days spoken of in Daniel 12 should be regarded as literal days. In other words, the time prophecies in Daniel 12 are different, according to her, from all the other time prophecies in Daniel and in the book of Revelation. For her, these time prophecies, the three figures in Daniel 12, are future. Another one is Englioda, who also says, understanding that the 1335 days, like the 1290 days, are future, literal days at the very end of time. A medical doctor by the name of Robert Smith, it should be noted that some historicists, including myself, believe that the nature of the apocalyptic time periods, 1260, 1290, 1335, in Daniel chapter 12, focus exclusively on the end time in units of literal time. Now, these are all, so far, what we have considered from a theological point of view. These are lay people, even though employed by the church, part of it. But now, the fourth one is Dr. Samuel Nunez. He is a graduate of Andrews University with a PhD, and he also believes that these time prophecies are for the future. He said, it is the linguistic and textual evidence that permits us to conclude that the days of Daniel 12, 11, and 12 should be understood in a literal way. I will come to him specifically later on. But first, I'm going to look at the proposal as it has been put forward by Marion Barry and others. And this new proposal contains a certain number of problems which make this interpretation unacceptable. The first problem I see is that the 3.5 times or 1260 days in Daniel 7, 25 and 12:7 are seen as two different time periods in history, one in the past and one in the future. This interpretation violates one of the fundamental principles of biblical hermeneutics, namely, Scripture interprets Scripture, one passage being the key to other passages. If this principle is discarded, prophecy becomes a wax nose which can be bent in any direction the interpreter wants it to go. Secondly, the prophecies of Daniel are given according to the principle of repetition and enlargement. This can be clearly seen by looking at the four major prophecies in the book, which all begin in the time of the author and end with the second advent. You have in Daniel 2, Babylon to the second advent. I'm not sure what this S is doing there. There should be obviously a computer glitch here. Daniel 7, Babylon to the second advent. Daniel 8 and 9, Medo-Persia to the second advent. And Daniel 10 to 12, also Medo-Persia to the second advent. I see this is the dash that's been changed into an S for some reason. Now, these parallel prophecies cover essentially the same sweep of time from Daniel's days to the second advent. Each prophecy emphasizes different aspects of this time period. Daniel 2 provides the overall historical outline. Daniel 7 introduces the little horn and emphasizes its political activities in history. And Daniel 8, building on Daniel 7, emphasizes the religious activities of the little horn. This underlines the fact that Daniel's prophecies must be interpreted in harmony with the scripture interpret scripture principle. Thus, common elements in different chapters of the book must refer to the same things or events. For example, the little horn in Daniel 7 and 8 must refer to the same historical power, not to two different powers. If the taking away of the daily in Daniel 8:11 refers to events in the past, so must the taking away of the daily in Daniel 12:11. And if the 3.5 times in Daniel 7:25 refer to the past, so must the 3.5 times in Daniel 12:7. To do otherwise makes a mockery of the scripture interpret scripture principle and leads to utter confusion. Thirdly, the passage in Daniel 12:5-13 is seen as a new vision which contains time prophecies for the future. This view ignores the basic structure of Daniel's visions, where visions are always followed by explanations. In Daniel 2, we have the vision. In 31-35, the image, and then the explanation. And so in each chapter, in each vision, we have first the vision and then the explanation. Now, while it is true that the vision in Daniel 11 and 12 is itself an explanation of the vision in Daniel 8, we must not overlook the fact that in Daniel 7, 8, and 10-12, the time prophecies are always situated within the explanation section, not in the visions themselves. In Daniel 7, the vision ends in verse 14, and the time prophecy is given in verse 25. In Daniel 8, the vision concludes in verse 12, and the time prophecy is given in verse 14. In Daniel 10-12, the vision ends in 12:4, and the time prophecies are given in 12:5-13. Now, this structure is destroyed if 12:5-13 is interpreted as a new vision. In other words, to repeat, the time elements in the visions are never given in the vision itself, but always in the explanation. And if this is not the case in Daniel 12, then the whole system or the whole pattern that we have in Daniel is destroyed. Number four. This new view completely ignores the linguistic and grammatical connections between the vision in Daniel 11 and the explanation in Daniel 12. First, it needs to be emphasized that the vision concludes in 12:4 with the command to Daniel to seal the book. 12:5-13 is an epilogue to the preceding vision, and in a sense to the whole book. It is not a new vision with a different topic, but an explanation of certain elements in the vision of chapter 11. This is evident from the question in 12:6, where it says, "How long shall be the fulfillment of these wonders?" The Hebrew word pele for wonders can be translated as awesome events or wonderful events. Since verse 5 does not refer to any event, these wonders can only refer to events seen in the vision in Daniel 11. The verb pala is in fact used in 11:36, where it refers to the blasphemy spoken by the king of the north. It is also used in 8:24, where the little horn destroys fearfully. And the word is again the verb pala. Furthermore, in Daniel 12:7-8, Daniel hears the words, "And when the powers of the holy people has been completely shattered, these things shall be finished." Because he does not understand what he heard, Daniel asks, "What shall be the end of these things?" Thus, three times in Daniel 12:6-8, we have references to these things or these wonders. Each time they refer to events of the vision in chapter 11. This clearly indicates that Daniel 12:5-13 is part of the vision of Daniel 11 and not a new vision. There is also a strong thematic and linguistic connection between the texts in Daniel 7:25 and 12:7. 7:25, he shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and the saints shall be given into his hand for time and times and half a time. And in 12:7, he swore that it shall be for a time, times and half a time. And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. Now the shattering of the power of the holy people in 12:7 lasts for 3.5 times and is the same as the persecution of the saints in 7:25, which also lasts for 3.5 times. This is further evidence that the times in Daniel 12 do not refer to the future, but to the past. Marion Barry, one of the main proponents of this new view, begins both the 1260 and the 1290 in Daniel 12 with the Universal Sunday Law up here, the Universal Sunday Law. This is the National. Here's the Universal. Universal Sunday Law and the 1260 and the 1290 begin with the Universal Sunday Law. The 1260 days, she believes, end with the Universal Death Decree. That's here, the Universal Death Decree. And the 1290 continue for another 30 days, literal days. Now she explains the extra 30 days here. These are the 30 days, the extra 30 days of the 1290. She explains the extra 30 days as two 15-day time periods. The first 15 days are the 1 hour in Revelation 17:12. That's here. 1 hour she translates into 15 days. And the second 15 days are the 1 hour referred to in Revelation 18:10. That's here. 1 hour, 15 days. What we have here is an amazing mix of literal and prophetic time. While the 1290 days are counted as literal, and also the 1335, which she begins with the National Sunday Law, and then the Universal Sunday Law, the other two time prophecies, and these are all literal days. But these here are suddenly prophetic times. So she has the 1 hour and another hour translated, because that's what it is. If you translate according to the year-day principle, 360 divided by 24 is 15. And so she has here these two time periods, the 15 days, on the basis of prophetic time translated with the year-day principle. But these other times are literal times, literal days, not converted by the year-day principle. So this mixing of literal and prophetic time is an indication of the confusion in this new view. Finally, this new interpretation of the times in Daniel 12 is also against clear statements of Ellen White. In 1880, she wrote, "I have borne the testimony since the passing of the time in 1844 that there should be no definite time set by which to test God's people. The great test on time was in 1843 and 1844, and all who have set time since this great period marked in prophecy were deceiving and being deceived." Now it is true that Ellen White here speaks about the date setting for the Second Advent, which this new view does not. They do not set time for the Second Advent. Nevertheless, there is no indication in her writings that any kind of prophetic time should play a role in the future. In fact, in a letter from 1850, Ellen White mentions a brother Hewitt from Dead River who believed that the destruction of the wicked and the sleep of the dead was an abomination and that Ellen White was Jezebel. She wrote to him, and she says here, "We told him of some of his errors in the past, that the 1335 days were ended, and numerous errors of this. It had but little effect. His darkness was felt upon the meeting, and it dragged." Now, some believe that in this statement, she places the 1335 days into the future. However, the sentence is generally understood to mean, "We told him of some of his errors in the past. We told him that the 1335 days were ended, and we told him numerous errors of his. Otherwise, if this is not the case, if this is not the meaning, otherwise we must ask why Ellen White reprimanded Brother Hewitt and not her husband and all the other pioneers who taught that the 1335 years were ended. James White, in an article in the Review and Herald in 1857, wrote, "Evidences are conclusive that the 1335 days ended with the 2300 with a midnight cry in 1844. Then the angel of Revelation 10 swore that the time should be no longer." Now in the same paper, Uriah Smith in 1863 stated, "Now it is manifestly wrong to date the 1290 days from the setting up of the papacy, when the prophecy says they are to date from the taking away of paganism," which for him was the daily, "which was 30 years previous. We therefore date the 1290 days from the year 508, and as the 1335 days are spoken of in connection with these, no possible reason can be given why they do not commence at the same point, the 1290 and 1260 end together in 1798. Now the fact that Ellen White nowhere argued against these statements supports the reading of her sentence as generally understood. At the same time, this indicates that she herself placed the 1335 days in the past. Now let's come to Samuel Nunez. This is a more scholarly attempt to interpret the time prophecies in Daniel 12 as literal days. Samuel is a PhD graduate of Andrews University, and in his 1987 doctoral dissertation entitled The Vision of Daniel 8, he made a systematic study of the different methods used in the interpretation of the book of Daniel. Then, last year, in 2006, he published a book on the prophecies of Daniel in Spanish. Now, some time ago, about a year ago, he sent me an English version of chapter 4 from this book. And the chapter is entitled The Sign of the End of the World, in which it deals with the time prophecies in Daniel 12. The chapter is at times fairly technical, but it impresses the reader with the author's detailed knowledge of the text. Now the following points will be discussed in this evaluation, and I sent him my evaluation a long time ago, but he didn't take any notice, at least not much, and published his view anyway. Literary structure we're going to look at, linguistic matters and hermeneutical issues, so it may be a little bit technical for some of you. First of all, the literary structure. A main pillar of Nunez's argument that the 1290 and 1335 days in Daniel 12:11-12 are literal time periods in the future is the literary structure of Daniel 10-12. While literary structures are helpful in analyzing biblical passages, the interpreter needs to be aware of the subjective component in establishing a literary structure. In regard to Daniel 10-12, Nunez, in harmony with most Daniel scholars, divides the text into three sections. Daniel 10:1-21, the two supernatural beings and Daniel's dialogue with Gabriel, then Daniel 11:1-12:4, which is the vision, Gabriel's predictive discourse, and then Daniel 12:5-13, two supernatural beings and Daniel's dialogue with Michael. What is puzzling in this paper is the fact that when Nunez discusses the text, he ignores this literary structure and begins his analysis with Daniel 12:1. That is, he takes the last part of Gabriel's discourse and combines it with the final section to form a new literary unit, the present chapter 12, which he then analyzes. Now we need to remember that chapter and verse divisions are not part of the original text. The division into chapters, for example, was only established in the 13th century AD. Since Nunez's focus is the time of the end, why did he not begin his analysis in 1140, where in the text the time of the end begins? The reason is simple. If he had started in 1140, one main pillar of his argument would not exist. On pages 8 and 9 of this manuscript, which he sent to me, Nunez presents the following chiastic structure, as you see it up here. This chiastic structure looks very impressive when you look at it. However, the chiastic structure is not as compelling as Nunez wants us to believe. For example, Nunez has several time prophecies in Daniel 12. You've got here the stand up, and then everlasting forever, your days, everlasting forever, days time. And that's fine. But what about the time references in verses 4 and 9, where it talks about the time of the end? The name Daniel, which he also has in the previous section, now I'm not sure, can we go back to the previous picture? Because I can't hear. Can we go back to the previous picture? Okay. Here you have Daniel and Daniel. But the word or the name Daniel also appears in verse 4, not just in verse 5 and 9. The Hebrew word amad, to stand, appears not only in verse 1, stand up, but it also appears in verse 5. But he doesn't put them in because it doesn't fit into the chiastic structure he wants to establish, so he just leaves them out. Thus, the chiastic structure is not as solid as it seems. And if one takes into account that the time of the end section begins in 11:40 and not in 12:1, the chiastic structure disappears altogether. Now, I understand since I sent him my evaluation, he has made some adjustments. He has included time of the end, but the overall structure is still the same. It's interesting to note that Nunes uses Daniel 11:40 to 45 when he explains Daniel 12:11, but not when he establishes the literary structure of the time of the end section in Daniel. Now some linguistic matters. Nunes claims that the preposition le in Daniel 12:7 should be translated after rather than for. He therefore translates the answer to the question in Daniel 12:6, until when shall the fulfillment of these wonders be, as certainly it will be after a time, times and half a time. But is this answering the question until when? The phrase at matai, or until when, expects an answer beginning with until or for, not after. And I give you some examples in Isaiah 6:11. Then I said, Lord, how long? At matai, the same expression as in Daniel. And he answered, until, at, the cities are laid waste and without inhabitants. In Daniel 8:13 and 14, I heard a holy one speaking. Another holy one said to the certain one who was speaking, how long, at matai, will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifice, the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot? And he said to me, for, or until, at 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. And in Daniel 12:6 and 7, we have the same situation. One said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, how long, at matai, shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? And then I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand, his left hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever, that it shall be for a time, le mo'ed, and times and half a time. And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. Now, Nunes is correct in stating that sometimes the temporal use of le can be translated by after. The question is this the case in Daniel 12:7? Now, the phrase le mo'ed appears 13 times in the Old Testament outside of the book of Daniel, and 5 times in the book. In the Old Testament, outside of the book of Daniel, it always has the meaning of at, within, or for, or according to the appointed time. And in Daniel 8:19, 11:27, and 29, it has the meaning at the appointed time, or it refers to the appointed time. And in 11:35, le mo'ed can be translated as for a time appointed, or until the time appointed. Thus, not once does le mo'ed mean after. Of course, this does not mean it cannot have this meaning in 12:7. However, in Daniel 7:25, we have the Aramaic equivalent to a time, times and half a time. And there the context clearly indicates that the saints shall be persecuted by the little horn for a time, times and half a time in the past. And since the shattering of the power of the holy people in 12:7, which lasts for 3.5 times, seems to be thematically the same as the persecution of the saints in 725, which also lasts for 3.5 times, it is difficult to see why the preposition le in Daniel 12:7 should be translated after rather than for. Secondly, Nunes claims that the wonders in Daniel 12:6 refer to God's salvific work on behalf of his people. That is, the destruction of the king of the north in 1145 and the liberation of the people of God in 12:1. Rather than to the blasphemous words of the king of the north in 1136, or to the incredible destruction of the little horn in 8:24. The reason he gives is that the latter two texts use the verb pala, whereas 12:6 uses the noun pele. Now first, it needs to be noted that the word wonders does not appear anywhere in 11:45 or 12:1. Secondly, in Daniel 8:24 and 11:36, the verb is a feminine participle used as a noun. Furthermore, as Hamilton, who is quoted by Nunes, has pointed out, there is no difference in meaning between the noun and the verb. In the book of Psalms, for example, both refer to God's wonders, either in a general sense or in a specific historically antecedent. While the noun pele generally refers to God's acts or words, in Lamentations 1:9 it refers to the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem, as Hamilton has pointed out. Thus, the statement that the noun pele is always used in the context of the acts or words of God and therefore cannot apply to Daniel 8:24-11:36 is special pleading and is not supported by the larger context of Scripture. It is argued that God used, if it is argued, and he may, if it is argued that God used the Babylonians to punish Jerusalem, well, we have to respond that whatever God allows, he does, according to Isaiah 45:7, including the activities of the little horn. God allows these things. Now, to my knowledge, every Daniel commentator, whether liberal or conservative, applies Pele in Daniel 12:6 to the activities of the little horn in 8:24 and the activities of the king of the north in 11:36. Thirdly, Nunes claims that the 12:90 and 13:35 days in Daniel 12 are literal days because the word yom in the Old Testament, when accompanied by numeral, always means literal days. And he refers to Ezekiel 4, 5, and 6 to prove his point. Now, while it is true that for Ezekiel the numbers referred to were literal days, he had to lie 390 days on the left side and 40 days on the right side, it is precisely this passage that shows that the 390 and 40 literal days symbolized 390 and 40 years. I have laid on you a day for each year. Daniel and Revelation are apocalyptic books, and in contrast to Genesis 1, for example, the days in these apocalyptic prophecies are symbolic and not literal, as Revelation 12:6 and 14 show. Verse 14. Now thirdly, hermeneutical issues. As indicated above, a fundamental principle of biblical hermeneutics is that Scripture interprets Scripture, one passage being the key to other passages. In Daniel 8:11 and 12, we find two key phrases repeated. In Daniel 11, you have the daily sacrifice. Sorry, you can't see that again. This is not a good thing. But the daily sacrifice was taken away. The place of his sanctuary was cast down. In Daniel 11, forces shall be mustered, etc. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place the abomination of desolation. And in Daniel 12, and from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. These passages are clearly parallel. Daily sacrifice taken away. Daily sacrifice taken away. Daily sacrifice taken away, each time referring to the same situation, and then twice here, place there the abomination of desolation is set up. Now it's interesting that Samuel Nunes agrees that Daniel 8 and 11, so these two, he says, do indeed refer to the taking away of the daily sacrifice in the past. In Daniel 12:11, however, now suddenly here, he sees the taking away of the daily and the setting up of the abomination of desolation as events in the future. He does this on the basis of the structure of Daniel 12, which he established at the beginning of the chapter. But as we have seen, the structure, the chiastic structure he finds in Daniel 12, is not as solid as he would like it to be. Nunes identifies the daily as the continual service of Christ's ministry in the heavenly sanctuary, which has been the Adventist position for a long time. That is in Daniel 8 and in Daniel 11. He has the same position as we have. But when it comes to Daniel 12, the daily suddenly is no longer Christ's heavenly ministry, but here it is primarily the Sabbath. He arrives at this conclusion in the following way. He says, what does it mean that the continual service would be put aside? Did we not say that it refers to the redemptive ministry of Jesus in the heavenly sanctuary? How then could the eschatological Christian Rome put aside or remove this ministry that operates in the heavenly sanctuary? To understand this issue, we must settle in the first place that the ministry of Jesus in the heavenly sanctuary is focused on the atonement of sin and the worship of God. In second place, we must see that Jesus' ministry in the heavenly sanctuary is performed in conformity to the principles of the law of God and on the basis of his sacrifice. Based on these facts, we can assert that the continual service will be put aside when the King of the North casts away the law of God and Jesus' ministry by imposing a universal and obligatory way, a religious day of observance, which would be contrary to the Ten Commandments of God. Consequently, he identifies the abomination of desolation as Sunday. Now, this is a curious mixture of different concepts. The Sabbath-Sunday issue is certainly an important element in Adventist eschatology, but to my knowledge, never before has anyone identified the Sabbath with the Tamid, that is, with the intercessory ministry of Jesus in the heavenly sanctuary. This raises the question, how does Nunes see the taking away of the daily sacrifice, setting up of the abomination in Daniel 8 and 11? Since he accepts 7098 as the end of the 3.5 times in Daniel 7:25, what happened in 538? Unfortunately, he does not deal with that in his chapter. Now, secondly, Nunes claims that Ellen White applies the expression abomination which causes desolation in Matthew 24:15 to the idolatrous standards of the Roman army and the future imposition of a false day of rest. Now, this is not quite correct. What Ellen White says is this: as the siege of Jerusalem by the Roman armies was the signal for flight to the Judean Christians, so the assumption of power on the part of our nation in the decree enforcing the papal Sabbath will be a warning to us. It will then be time to leave the large cities preparatory to leaving the smaller ones for retired homes in secluded places among the mountains. So she compares two signs. As the siege of Jerusalem was a sign for the Christians, so Sunday laws would be a sign for the faithful at the time of the end to leave the cities. Nowhere in the context does she even refer to the expression abomination of desolation. She identifies the abomination of desolation with the Roman standards in great controversy. My last point is number three. As shown before, the basic structure of Daniel's vision indicates that the visions are always followed by explanations. Daniel 12 provides explanations for the whole vision of Daniel 11, not just for the last few verses. The fact that the man dressed in linen said to Daniel, "Go, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end," does not imply, as Nunes claims, that Daniel wanted to know more about the events of the time of the end. The phrase, "Acharit ele," the end of these things, in Daniel's question, "My Lord, what shall be the end of these things?" is not asking what will happen at the end of time, but what is the conclusion of all these wonderful things he has been told. One of the meanings of Acharit is the end or conclusion of a transaction or event. Daniel wanted to know what the end, the outcome, the result of all the wonderful things he had heard would be. Now, I have another section, the Adventist interpretation, but I'm going to skip that now because my time is almost up. Well, let's have question time, 5 minutes. Most of people know how we interpret the time references in Daniel, so We don't need to go into this now.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.